Techno Progressivo. You are listening to Techno Progressivo on 101.9 CITR in Vancouver.
Hello, I'm DJ Wah. You are listening to, welcome to Techno Progressivo. I'm DJ Wah. You're listening to 101.9 CITR in Vancouver. This is the Fun Drive 2019 edition of the show. For those of you who are new to the show, this station holds an annual fundraiser called Fun Drive, and this helps all of the programmers on air and the station to continue to bring you unique radio shows that can only be found here on CITR. If you're a diehard Techno Progressivo fan or just love electronic music, feel free to make a donation to the station to help us continue to bring you quality independent radio like we offer. So tonight's station goal, or the station goal in general, is $40,000 over this fund drive. We are right now just over the $8,000 mark. You can make donations a couple of ways at the CITR website, where it's citr.ca/donate, or you can call 604 UBC unit, which is 604-822-8648. So for tonight's show, I am going to do something that I haven't done before. I'm doing an interview retrospective. It's kind of a look back on what my show has brought to the station over the years. So I'm going to start off with the second interview I ever did, which is way back in 2014. And I chose this in particular because I sound so rookie when I was doing it. And yeah, I just thought it sounded kind of funny. So enjoy this. It's Anna Luno. She's out of Australia. And I will be back here in a bit.
Okay, so this is DJ Wah speaking to Anna Luno, a DJ, vocalist, and producer who has had a roughly a 10-year career in the electronic music industry with over 10 single and EP releases on iTunes currently. Thank you for agreeing to do this. It's a pleasure to speak with a producer whose career is definitely on the upswing and a female in an industry typically dominated by male DJs and producers. So this is Anna Luno. So your SoundCloud page mentions that you're currently living in LA via Sydney, Australia. Why did you choose to move to the States, and how does your experience there differ from your time in Australia?
I decided to move to America because I felt like in Australia I felt like I'd done a lot of the things that I wanted to do. I just started touring a lot more in America and saw there was a lot of opportunity over here and really enjoyed the gigs that I was doing, and it's just a much bigger country with a lot more opportunities.
To mix multiple compilations for the Ministry of Sound Australia. Do you see yourself as a groundbreaker for female DJs? And do you think, as a female in this industry, are there challenges that you would face that a male DJ might not?
I think that no one really thinks of themselves as a groundbreaker. I don't think about the fact that I'm a female DJ. I just do the work. And I mean, of course, there's benefits and non-benefits of being a female, but I try not to think about it.
Always deliver. deliver.
I'm your high heel killer. I'm your midnight thriller. I'm your bass drum dealer. And I always deliver.
And I always deliver.
High heel killer. I'm your midnight thriller. I'm your bass drum dealer. And I always deliver.
And I always deliver.
Starting point when you're coming up with songs?
It always starts with the hooks, vocal and synthetic. So, yeah, that's where it begins. And then I usually build the beat around it as a secondary component. It starts as chords and vocals.
Okay. And do you typically work alone when you're in the studio, or do you have people that you collaborate with?
Both. So I start songs by myself a lot and work on remixes and do a lot of work here alone, and then I also love collaborating. For me, collaborating is kind of like the way that I think about a DJ set, where I love to get in the room with someone and work out the common ground between us and make something that really captures something unique for both of us.
Baby,
CITR's funding drive is the week of February 28th to March 7th. Our goal is to raise $40,000 in donations. This year is really special. We are celebrating 80 years of independent, unadulterated, nonprofit radio. And we couldn't have made it this far without the support of you, our listeners. So thank you. Unlike commercial radio, we depend on you to keep growing. We spend 1 week a year asking our listeners for donations. Just one. February 28th to March 7th, donate to keep CITR weird and pleasant on the ears. You can donate online at citr.ca/donate or in person and over the phone by calling 604-UBC-UNIT.
Which DJ format do you use when you're performing, and why do you use that one?
Well, right now I'm just using just the regular setup of CDJs and USBs, because I think that's so easy and fun to carry around.
You just finished playing your first US gig, and how did that go?
Oh, that was crazy. It was so good to start with a sold out show in San Francisco, so we're doing the same thing all over again today.
Good. And then which club were you at in San Francisco?
We were playing at Audio.
What can Vancouverites expect from your DJ set at Celebrities this Friday, the 20th of November?
That's going to be a good combination of deeper beats and some hands-in-the-air moments.
Do you have any upfront tracks or bootlegs that you'll be playing?
Yeah, a lot of music that hasn't been released yet or will be released in the upcoming months. So I'm just trying them out a lot on this tour, so definitely a lot of my own stuff.
You have been released on a credible list of labels, including CR2 and Junadeep, So Sure, Ultra, and Nelly. Which label are you most proud of being released on, and why?
Well, right now, I have to say Anjuna, of course. It's sort of where I've ended up after all those labels.
Which do you enjoy doing more, producing or DJing, and why?
I enjoy producing a bit more because it takes a lot more time to master, and the satisfaction is a bit bigger when you get something done. DJing does, it's amazing to play a track that you've just finished. I can do producing at home and I can just concentrate on it's my sort of escape place.
Okay, that was Finnish producer Yado, and that was an interview that I did with him when he was here back in 2015. This is the Fun Drive 2019 edition of Techno Progressivo. CITR offers a unique mix of talk radio and musical shows that feature Vancouver flair. So if you enjoy our programming, I encourage you to donate to help the show and the station reach its goal of $40,000. You can do that a couple of ways. One is either by donating online, which is at CITR.ca/donate, or you can call 604-UBC-UNIT, or that's 604-822-8648. There's people manning the phones right now, so don't let them sit and wait there. Get on those phones. This helps us continue to bring you special programming that we offer. Back to my interview retrospective that I'm doing for interview greatest hits that I've done over the years. Next up is local label boss owner Luke McKeon, the guy that owns Nordic Tracks. That'll be followed up with a guy that he actually releases on Nordic Tracks. He's based out of Calgary. His name's John DeLeon. So enjoy these couple of interviews, and I will be back again in a little bit.
All right. What initially compelled you to start Nordic Tracks?
Earlier, I was involved in this label, MoFunk, and I had two partners in that. And MoFunk was actually also a club night, which we started at Richards on Richards, which we were trying to bring some acts from out of town. Well, we were bringing. We brought some to Starfish Room and a few other places. Our idea was to bring some of the shows that artists that we wanted to see that weren't coming to Vancouver, and we thought, well, they should be coming here. And Richards on Richards, it was kind of funny because, like, well, when Richards closed about 10 years ago, you know, there was all this, nostalgia for it, and oh, it was such a great live venue and stuff. But honestly, like, when we went there in the mid-90s, they were having a really hard time getting anyone other than their old crowd from the 80s to go there. It had a terrible reputation. And even though it was a great live, I mean, we always saw potential, trying to get over people's preconceptions about it was really difficult. Therein was the opportunity, too, because it was a decent-sized room. So if you had, like, a 200-person event, you could close upstairs and you could do a party, and if you had a bigger act from out of town, you could do that. So we had acts like actually Kruger and Dorfmeister, the only time they ever played in Vancouver, was there. We had Omar, we did Maceo Parker, the Soul Sonics, Grey Boy All-Stars, and the Foodies, the Roots. So it was a pretty good time musically. Then what happened was, out of that, my one partner in doing the club nights, we started a label with a third guy, and MoFunk was a really cool thing, but it had some different focus. It was basically going and licensing music that was already out there from other labels. So you had at the time, like, say, Acid Jazz in England and Talkin' Loud and other, and what they were really known for were these compilations, right? So we kind of took the same format but applied it to music from Canada and the States and Australia. And so it was a great learning experience, and I just really have no regrets. But of the three of us, I guess I would say that I was the sort of more active working DJ in the scene in Vancouver, and I had been DJing like since I was a teenager, and so I enjoyed the compilations and the work, but it wasn't really a reflection of what I was listening to and playing in the clubs. I proposed to the guy that we do this dance label that was more reflective, and that was only on CDs at the time, MoFunk, and I wanted to do vinyl because those DJs, that's all we were playing. The story goes is that we did one vinyl release, Nordic Tracks number one, and then the manufacturing bills came in, and the guys saw, like, okay, wait a minute, this is way more risky than what we were already doing, which is totally legitimate, you know, issue. Putting out original music as opposed to licensing tracks that have already got a bit of a track record and everything is more risky. But I was quite confident, at least, that that was more I wanted to focus on, and so I just took the label myself at that point. I mean, I would have been happy to have those guys been a part of it, but it wasn't really their thing, and so I just kind of ran with it, and for the rest is history, pretty much. So, but it wasn't really, I didn't think, okay, we'll be putting out my goal is to reach 20 years or anything.
what point did this become more than just a hope and a hobby, and actually you realized this was a legitimate career that you had?
I think probably, if I was just being a business person, I would have just focused on doing club nights and following, selling tickets. It's a much easier business and much more lucrative. You know, you have various stages of growth, right? So at first you're just happy to get orders, and then you're happy, okay, they're paying, right? And then the next one is now you're getting some decent reviews and you're starting to get feedback and outside of your own circle. So like Nordic Tracks number five from Gavin Froome, coming to Brazil, that one definitely turned some heads over in Europe. And we had people like, Carl Cox and a few like other pretty big artists at that time that we didn't even realize they were playing it. And then we found, radio got reviews and DJ Mag and stuff. So all of a sudden you're like, okay, this isn't just our little circle. And then after our seventh release, we got an offer from Prime Distribution in England to do what's called a P&D, which is like a production distribution deal. I would say that was kind of like probably a good moment for us to realize that it was at least legitimate insofar as that other someone else was willing to take a risk. But something like Prime was about it was just that they were helpful in terms of just sort of giving us a stamp of approval, and also too, then it's financing, right? Because as a label, you're still responsible for paying your royalties and paying the artists and the designers and stuff, but the manufacturing and everything would be handled by them, and then the collecting from the stores and everything, it's handled by them. So, okay. And other distributors. I think it was for about the next, that was NTO8. So, and we worked with them until NTO30 or something like that. Okay. So yeah, it was kind of a wild time, but to kind of bring it full circle to your original question, really when I left, I was a partner in Sonar. And with Sonar, I left 1 year before the venue ended up closing. And that was me kind of just, I was sort of done with just, I couldn't really do the club scene full time anymore as a partner. I really wanted to focus on the label. And from about 2004, 2005 to the present, the label has been, my primary focus. I still throw events and I still DJ, as you know, but they're other two areas complementary to the label. But really, it's hard to believe 20 years has gone by, and in a way it kind of feels like I'm just getting going in terms of really learning.
CITR's funding drive is the week of February 28th to March 7th. Our goal is to raise $40,000 in donations. This year is really special. We are celebrating 80 years of independent, unadulterated, nonprofit radio. And we couldn't have made it this far without the support of you, our listeners. So thank you. Unlike commercial radio, we depend on you to keep growing. We spend 1 week a year asking our listeners for donations. Just one. February 28th to March 7th, donate to keep CITR weird and pleasant on the ears. You can donate online at citr.ca/donate or in person and over the phone by calling 604-UBC-UNIT.
What was the electronic music scene like in Calgary when you first got into producing and DJing?
When I first started, the scene was quite small. I remember there was one record store downtown called The Attic. That was the main store. That was where all the Calgary jocks would go down to listen to the new vinyl. And I remember being pretty young and heading down there, asking my parents if I could go downtown and check out this record store. And they, of course, said it was cool. And I remember just going in there and being so nervous and kind of like scared almost to see all these older guys, listen to music and talking about music. And I felt like an outsider. But at the same time, I kind of was like inspired by it as well, because it was so neat to just see, all the music. And then I slowly, these guys were talking about this party or this rave that was going on, and I remember getting just to discover dance music. I went out late and I was like, what is this, man? This pulsing beat is like probably really early techno playing, and dancing my ass off for like 4 or 5 hours and leaving super pumped on dance music after that. That was a life changer for me. So the scene as it's grown though, or as it's changed, I think is it's come a long way. The nice thing is now it's like you could pretty much go out, Thursday, Friday, Saturday in Calgary, Sunday even, you're gonna the chances are is a place to go, there's something to do. There's a lot of good people in Calgary pushing the scene forward and helping the city to grow for sure.
When you are performing, what is the live performance setup that you use and why?
when I'm DJing live, pretty standard stuff. I like to use CDJs now. I still love vinyl and I still play vinyl, but you know, 9 times out of 10, if you're at a show or a festival or whatnot, it's usually CDJ 2000s from Pioneer, and a Pioneer DJM 900 Nexus is kind of my go-to. But I do love the Rain rotary mixer as well. I've got one here in the studio and I also like to play on those too. Moving to CDJs was kind of one of those things where the needles don't skip. You don't have to worry about setting up the tone arms. You don't, like, every time you go to play somewhere, there's always these little variables. And so it's just like jump in. I got pretty good at it pretty quick where I could, you know, start kind of cutting up loops live and just manipulating it. It's a lot faster. I don't incorporate a lot of synths and a lot of drum machines into my DJ sets yet. Something I might want to do a little bit more. I've been experimenting a bit. I'm not quite there yet. It's not really, I have too much fun DJing, just like playing tracks. So,
okay, so we've talked a little bit about your DJing. So now let's go to the production side of things. When you are producing, which DAW do you produce with?
I'm a Cubase guy. I've been using Cubase forever. I love it. I work in a music shop here in Calgary, so I have the pleasure of trying out a bunch of different gear and DAWs. And I got a copy of Ableton Live 9 as like a promotion thing. And I do use it a bit, but for me, Cubase is fantastic. And I love it. It's unreal.
Okay. Within Cubase, are there any VSTs that you absolutely couldn't live without, and why?
I will give a huge shout out to UA, Universal Audio. Those guys make some of the best sounding compressors, reverbs, limiters, all that kind of stuff. So there's a couple of UA products that I use constantly. I always love it. And it really can do a good job to kind of beef up your tone, add just to make your bass lines and the drums and everything really big and full. UA's probably my favorite. My very favorite virtual synth is a Mini Moog for sure. Okay. That's a go-to for bass lines. Anyone who wants to look up the Arturia Mini Moog stuff, it hammers.
Okay, do you use any outboard gear or just VSTs?
I do use some gear. Yeah, I've got my two favorite synths at the moment are the Juno 106 Classic Roland synth and Nord Lead. I love that synth too. It's really cool. It's like a analog, but it's controlled all by electronics, so it's very accurate and sounds killer. And one of the things that I was blessed enough to get when I was like a young man growing up was a Korg stage echo. So it's a tape delay.
Okay.
And absolutely love that thing. Yeah, it just adds that kind of fat dub delay to your songs. And it, you know, you throw a little bit of that on a hit here or two, and it just like takes over. It sounds super organic and warm. I love that piece.
What do you feel more passionate about, performing live or producing music, and why?
Probably more I mean, I love to DJ, but I think for me, passion-wise, it has to be making music. I think it feels a little more rewarding to me at the end of the day. It's a really tough question though too, Mike, because I really do like love the energy exchange when you're playing with the dance floor and things are, you know, you can really feel the energy in the room. Everything's super flowing and, you know, you're vibing off everybody and people are vibing. It's a great party all the way around. I love that. But as far as what I get the most out of would be probably producing. You know, there's something special about just kind of sitting down to work on a song or something and then start with one thing and you end up with something completely different. And at the end of it, you know, it feels like an accomplishment to me. So it feels good getting those tracks done. And just, you know, sometimes it's neat to me to listen back and have a track that you've been working on for a long time, leave it for a day, come back and just soak it up, because it is really rewarding to me to just pick out all the little details and just the whole vibe of it. It's almost like you start with nothing and you end up with something cool. It's like it feels really cool to me. I love it.
In 2005 and 2009.
Okay, I'm DJ Wa. You're listening to the Fun Drive 2019 edition of the radio show Techno Progressivo. Hold on, let me give one second there. This is the station's annual fun driving event. Sunday night on CITR offers a unique showcase of electronic music. At 7, More Than Human presents the eclectic side of electronica. 8 o'clock is Techno Progressivo, time where I feature my mixes, guest mixes, and DJ interviews. That's followed by 2 hours of Transcendence, a show that's been bringing you trance for almost 2 decades, I think, which is pretty impressive. There's no other place in Vancouver that offers programming like this, so help us, the station, reach its $40,000 fundraising goal this year by calling 604-UBC-UNIT at 604-822-8648 or by donating online at citr.ca. I'm on to the final of my interviews here, final of my 3 interview sets. I'm going to look back. Next on tap is a Toronto producer. Her name's Lisa Shaw. Beautiful vocal stylings here, and that's followed up by the inimitable English producer, James Abila. So enjoy these both, and I'll be back in a bit. In 2005 and 2009, you released 2 long players. The first was Cherry, out on Naked Music Recordings, and the second was titled Free on Salted Music. What opportunities does a long player offer you that making singles doesn't?
Your fans want to hear the album. They want to hear, like, the story, you know, the 12 songs and the 13. Like, right now, I'm just being hassled. Where's your third album? And I'm like, I'm working on it, but it's difficult because you end up doing singles and you get caught up in doing singles for different artists just to keep it flowing. And then at albums, you know, people are doing them in such short periods of time now. You can't, like, take 3 years to do it anymore. You have to do it, like, you know, 6 months or 8 months. Then it's fresh and you keep, otherwise you just keep going back and redoing stuff. Albums, to me, whether they sell or not, as the entire album or singles, I think it's just a piece of work, like a body of work that I think people look forward to, as opposed to just singles here and singles there. They want to hear from 0 to 60. They want to hear how, you know, I mean, I kind of go a little crazy on I'm sure artists, most artists do, like the order of songs, you know, that kind of all that little stuff is important in the flow and mood that you're going to create. It's like watching a movie.
You're going to be playing at Celebrities in Vancouver on Saturday, the 5th of August. What can Vancouverites look forward to in your performance that night?
I have a couple of new tracks out with Miguel. One is Waterfall, and the other one is I Can See It. So I really get confused by the lyrics. And a few of those. I haven't been to Vancouver with Miguel for quite a few years now. Just playing with him will be, I'm so looking forward to that, actually. But yeah, I have a couple of new tunes that have been released recently.
When you are performing together with Miguel Miggs, do you plan in advance when you're going to be performing, or is it sort of more spontaneous than that?
I review all the stuff that I possibly think we're going to do. You know, maybe it's sound check. We'll talk about it. I never know what I'm going to sing on the second half, or my, because I do two sets of three songs. One earlier when he starts, and then one towards the end when he finishes. But I just, we always feel it out, because you never know what the audience is like. It's like a DJ has a collection or tracks, and he kind of decides at the time when he's playing how he's going to do it. So it's not, it's kind of similar to that, but we feel it out. Like, hey, I think this one would be better to do that one, or this one first and that one third. So we do, yeah, I do have a kind of an idea,
okay,
but we decide pretty much right before I go on.
All right. What is your vision for the future of yourself and in your productions?
Right, recently, I released something with Nicodemus, and it's a cover of Mary Jane Girls in My House, out now on Tracksource and all these other online music sites. And in August, late August, I have another record coming out with Night Riders. It's called Under Pressure. So look out for that one.
Okay.
I'm really, really excited about it.
Recognize the song playing in the background? Plays every hour on the hour as part of our flagship station ID. If you do recognize this song, chances are less than 1 in 12 that you have donated to CITR. That means 11 out of 12 of our regular listeners are getting our content for free. So naturally, we called local businesses to see if we could get that kind of a deal. Here's how things went when we called Budgie's Burritos.
Budgie's Burritos.
Hi.
Hey.
I was wondering if you have any kind of deal on right now where I could get like a dozen burritos for the price of one.
No.
Okay. Do you have any promotions on right now?
No, we don't do promotions.
Oh. Okay.
Cool. Bye.
You can show your support right now on your mobile device or computer by heading to citr.ca/donate or in person and over the phone during our annual fundraising week, February 28th to March 7th. Donate to keep CITR weird.
I read in an issue of iDJ magazine from years ago that you discovered features within Pioneer CDJs and the EFX units that Pioneer didn't even know existed. So this eventually led to a relationship between you and Pioneer. And what is the nature of the relationship that you have with them? How have their products helped your performances?
Well, the relationship I got with them is amazing. In fact, I've been in LA this week in a hotel room. I wanted to play with the new Torize sampler that they made. I've got one at home and I'm sort of using it at home, but I really wanted to mess around with it some more. So they FedEx new one to my hotel. So it's sat on the desk right next to me. So it's a great relationship. I get to mess around with their equipment and work on their firmware. And so I get involved a little bit with the design stuff, depends on what the equipment is. Like, I worked a hell of a lot on the RMX 1000 effects unit. That's kind of the thing that I worked on the most recently. But yeah, with the CDJ 2000s as well, I toured with those. And I did a tour around the States and Mexico, actually, with the first CDJ 2000s. And we were testing the firmware at my gigs. And, like, it was a really insane thing to do because they were cutting out and things weren't working right. You know, this is really early days. And after every gig, we'd send back a report to Japan and, you know, their engineers would work on the firmware and send it back to us.
How soon is the turnaround on that from you sending it to them and them up?
It was very quick because it was a tour of, I did a tour of the States, Mexico, and then South America. And so it was a lot of gigs. And Yeah, pretty much. After every gig, we'd sit in my hotel room and be like, well, this didn't work, that did work. You know, we want it to do this or whatever. And then it would come back ready for the next gig. It was pretty amazing.
Currently, what is the performance setup that you use and why?
It hasn't actually changed too much in the last couple of years. I still use the CDJs in a traditional sense that I mix one track into the next, but throughout the set I'll dive in and out of Ableton, and I have the mixer set up to be a control surface, and the iPad is a control surface, and I've got another an old Vestax controller as well, which I use. And obviously the RMX. I think that's enough. I try to keep it fairly simple. I mean, that's, you know, already more complicated than I'd like sometimes. But and I've got this new sampler as well, which I was just talking about, the Torize SP16, which just came out. I haven't actually integrated that into my setup. I've been using it to produce more than anything else. But it's actually designed to work alongside the CDJs. But that's something I've yet to incorporate. But never say never.
Okay, when you're performing, how much of what you do is rehearsed and practiced ahead of time, and how much of it is just spontaneous as you're performing?
Yeah, most of it is spontaneous, but I think if you prepare well, you know, it allows you to be spontaneous. So if you, for example, if you set up a load of tracks with all hot cue points beforehand, it allows you to, when you perform, to be spontaneous. So the more you prepare, the more you can sort of ad-lib. Yeah, so there are things that work sometimes which are ad-libbed, and then I'll do them again.
You're renowned as one of the most technically proficient DJs in the world. What sort of practice do you do to maintain this ability and also to continue to evolve when you're performing?
Very little in terms of practice. It's not as much as I would like. I mean, I've got all my turntables and everything set up at home in my basement, and I'll go downstairs and just sort of have a play. I don't really see it as practicing. It's just messing around. But then sometimes I am sat down there and like 3 hours have gone by and I've just been like messing around with drum pads on like the sampler thing that just came out. I put it up on my Instagram and it's just the result of me just sitting there nerding out. Yeah, so I don't practice really. I just mess around and have fun.
Okay.
And, you know, you learn stuff that way.
Okay, we are all done for the 2019 Fund Drive edition of Techno Progressivo. So remember to donate online at citr.ca/donate or by calling 604-UBC-UNIT. Pardon me, I got a frog in my throat. If you enjoyed this, look back at the interviews done on the show over the years. You can check it out again in podcast form either at iTunes or at citr.ca. Up next is going to be Transcendence with Smiley Mike. I'm out of here for another episode, but before I go, let's hop back in time for the time machine, in the time machine for this week's track from the past. For this one, we're going to hop back all the way to 2004, 15 years ago, if you can believe it. This is Tiësto from his album, Just Be. The track was titled Traffic. Enjoy this. I'm going to be away from the show for a couple of months. I will be back in early May. So thanks for listening. And again, remember to get out there and remember to get online, vote for fun or donate for Fund Drive. And I will see you when I return.